Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Voices of Hope. This week we have Lori Probstdorfer. And Lori works for One Hope Wine, which is a wine company that sells wine, but also gives back to different charities. So whatever wine you drink, it is a different charity that gives back to. It's a great thing. She's going to talk about that in the podcast. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff. We're going to talk about life. We're going to talk about recent events. This podcast was recorded at the end of last month, and so you're going to hear us talk about Parkland and the shooting that happened there. And so just know this was recorded back then and releasing today. And so enjoy our conversation. This is the longest one we have done. And if you want to support Lori, One Hope, or a charity of your choice, contact her and she will hook you up with some good wine. All right, enjoy the conversation. Well, Lori, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So we could talk about anything. We've just been talking about your kids, me being middle child, your middle child, all that stuff.
Yep.
But I think one of the things we could talk about is maybe you do One Hope Wine.
I do.
And at New Hope, you're kind of known as the wine lady. And whenever there's a One Hope box that shows up in the office, we know somebody around New Hope has bought some
wine. It's actually
wine from Lori.
One of the jokes I tell at my tastings, because people, people have to be home to accept the wine, and people work, and I'm like, I do a lot of tastings for my church friends, and they just have it sent to church. Pastor walks through and says, "Oh, you had a big weekend, didn't you?" Yeah. So I do. I'm. It's really been fun too. It's actually helped me get to know a lot more people at church, which I think is funny. I've been at this church a long time, so turns out wine is a shared experience for a lot of us. So. Yeah, it's a cool gig. It's a really cool gig. It makes a person feel good. I was saying yesterday to somebody, I don't know what the time frame on this is, yesterday was kind of a rough day.
This will be released a couple of weeks from
now. Okay, so anyway, yeah.
The other day.
This is just after a horrible shooting in Florida. And so yesterday was kind of a hard day for people. Mm-hmm. And it was a hard day for me. But I get to stay in this really, generally speaking, really hopeful place, right? With my job and my company because of what we do, because we give back with everything, and it feels good. You know, it feels really good. It feels good to drink wine, first of all. Mm-hmm. But then to know that you're feeding hungry kids, or you're finding homes for pets, or all the things that we do. So
veterans.
I'm really. Yeah, I'm really blessed to be in this super positive, happy place, very hopeful place all the time. And so
it
anyway.
Makes other people feel good about drinking
exactly.
Wine. when I got your wine that supported veterans and then also pets.
Yes.
I was like, you know what? I should drink more of this.
That's right. Well, I mean, you know, and we do joke about that, of course, but, you know, the goal for our company is, the ultimate goal is to create a marketplace where everything that we buy in our lives gives back in some way. Mm-hmm. You're a millennial, the man who started our company, he's only 34, he started it when he was 24, and he started it based on the mission to give back with everything that we do, and a vision to make the world a better place. And that's very common for millennials. I feel like millennials get a bad rap. Mm-hmm. And you know, whatever about that. I just think we're learning
every generation has their.
Right, exactly.
But we'll get to it in a second.
Okay.
I have a theory that millennials and boomers are very similar. But anyway.
Well, here's what I was going to say. Here's what I think. And you know, whatever. I say it as kind of a joke, but I also think it's kind of true. I think. The millennials that I know are very focused on giving back and doing good in the world with what they do. It also happens to be who I surround myself with in my work. But my theory is you guys are like that because we raised you.
Yeah.
We raised you to be like that.
We reflect the generation that raised us in a certain way.
Thank you for understanding that. And I'm not like taking credit, but I do. It certainly makes sense. I raised these people to be this way, you know?
That's why I always get upset whenever there's this negative article out there about millennials written by a boomer, baby boomer.
And dude, like, this is your kid you're talking about right now. Yeah. Yeah.
You raised us this way. I don't... it is interesting because I think we do reflect each other in a certain way because I think the boomers have an idea of giving back. I think it's a little bit different than the way millennials think about giving back, but I hope I don't offend any Gen X people. But
those Gen Xers.
One of the staples of Gen X is that they're very self-focused.
Right.
And I think the kids that they're going to raise are going to be a little more self-focused. I think it's just like the alternating
interesting,
generations.
Yeah.
And I kind of see that with church stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of Gen X people you just don't see very often because there's other great things to
do.
And I don't blame them because if it's nice on a Sunday and there's
fresh
snow on the ground up in the mountains, why wouldn't you go skiing?
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
But that's, those are the similarities, I think.
One of the things I think is really interesting is I have a lot of friends who are teachers. And I know you experience it here as well. We're at a time when, probably the first time ever, where we have in a workplace, for example, in a school, you've got boomers who are my age, and then you've got Gen Xers, and then you've got millennials, and even some of whatever we're calling the next one. What are the next ones? I don't even know.
It's like, why some... But
we don't know yet.
They don't have like,
they don't have a full profile. Right. Anyway, and so really that's how my business is. So I'm a boomer and but my company owners are millennials, but I have, 700 people on my team and they range in age literally from 21 up to 65. Right. So it's how we have to, and again, it speaks so much to today, but we have to learn how does a millennial hear things differently than I hear things? And I need to be sensitive to how you're hearing things or how I'm presenting things. I don't know. I just think it's really so interesting that, how it all works together and how we have to be respectful of one another and,
Well, people forget that that's just part of community.
Right.
Right?
Right.
People start to complain, like, I should be able to say what I want to say. It's like, not when you're a community with a certain people.
Right.
Like, you have to do what's best for the whole body.
Right.
And I think another interesting thing that about boomers and millennials, I really do think when boomers started entering the workforce, it was a similar situation to what the millennials are facing. Not in the same ways, but similar. If I remember correctly, boomers were probably entering the workforce around 77.
Well, I'm at the 80. End of
it.
I'm like the young boomer. So I think that started in the 50s.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah. So yeah. 60s, 70s.
Cuz that was during the big inflation stuff.
Right.
Was that Ford or Carter or somebody, and jobs weren't easy to come by, and anyway, but I think one of the things that millennials face is the student loan stuff that nobody else has faced yet.
Right.
That's an interesting conversation to have with some people.
It is. And let's see, I have a couple of stories about that. But one of them is my middle son wants to be an anesthesiologist. And he sort of made this decision in high school, sort of toward the end of high school, that he wanted to do something in the medical field. He wanted to be a doctor. He knew that. And then he sort of narrowed it down. So, we've lived in this town for 24 years. And he's had the same pediatrician for 24 years. So we went and talked to Dr. Josepher about what is it like to be a doctor. And Herb Josepher was sort of transferring his practice to a younger guy, Mike Malobsky, who's probably, I don't know how old he is, but, you know, Herb is 80 and Mike is 40. Let's mm-hmm. say that. And so we asked Herb, and he said, well, he had some great advice and said, you know, it's the most rewarding thing you'll ever do. And, you know, gave him great advice. And then we talked to Malofsky, and he said he has 7 kids. And we were, because we were talking about the money part of it.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And I said, so it's, a you know, basically it's a lot of school and a lot of debt. And he's like, well, yeah, but I'm not worried about the debt. He said, you know, I'm going to pay my student loan, but I'm going to pay the minimum. I'm going to take care of my kids.
Yeah.
And I love what I do. And so I'm happy to pay that. It doesn't matter. So for me, it, like, I think for both of us, it sort of gave us a different perspective, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Like, I got a house payment. I got to pay my house payment. I'm going to live in my house. Well, right?
That's exactly how Michelle and I started viewing it. Because it depends who you talk to. Some people are extremely fiscally, like, tight mm-hmm. and believe you should pay off your debts. You should be debt-free.
Right.
Dave Ramsey stuff.
Right.
And I was like, I don't think that's going to happen for us. I think our student loans, because we both have undergrad and graduate loans,
yeah.
and combined together, it is, well, it's like a house in Iowa, and I hear it. But, like, it is like a house.
But, yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, we got into the income-based repayment plan, and so we don't have to pay a terrible amount every month, but it's just like, well, it's just what we pay
right.
pay every month then.
Right. And I think, you know, it also informed his decision about where he was going to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
He's a super bright kid. He's, you know, very involved in, you know, all the things. He could have gone to a lot of schools, in other words.
Yeah.
For a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he ended up going to a smaller school that gave him a full academic scholarship.
That was in Grand Junction.
Yeah, he's right? at yep. Colorado Mesa.
Yes.
Was it not his first choice at all? You know? But yeah, he gets it. Like, I'm going to be in school for a long time. And the truth of the matter is, I say to my other child who's coming up, I think it's ridiculous to spend $80,000 on an undergraduate degree.
Yeah.
I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's the dumbest. Why? And then you're going to get out of school and get a job paying what? You know, like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
It's stupid. It's so inflated.
See, that's the thing I wanted to change my mindset going into college. I went to a private liberal arts Christian college. And I went there because I was going to go into ministry. And so I got a church ministry leadership degree in theology, which, if I didn't go to seminary, translates to not making
yeah.
enough to pay off what you
right.
went to school for.
Right.
And so in some ways, I was like, I should have got a different degree in college and then went to seminary.
Yeah.
But because in the church world, you have to go to seminary in order to make any kind of decent
okay.
salary.
Yeah. Yeah. And seminary is a whole nother, it is a lot like medical school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you're going to do your undergrad and then you're going to do your master's
yep.
and then you got to do the, you know, the doctor work or the doctor
well, maybe,
work or whatever.
If you want to.
I mean, who knows? Yeah. Who knows?
I said the only way I'm going to do that is if somebody else pays for it.
Right. Well, I mean, but the bottom line is, like Mike Malofsky said, you're doing what you love, right? And it doesn't have to be, I don't know, maybe I'm giving terrible advice. I don't know. And I felt like a bad parent, you know, to say, look, I'm not spending that kind of money for you. And I think it's stupid. So you're going to have to take out loans and then it's on you. Like, you know, we have a budget. This
right,
is what
right,
we can
right.
afford or whatever. So anyway, and then now he's an RA. So he's, and he has 2 jobs at school. I mean.
Does he get free room and board then
mm-hmm.
as RA? Yeah, I did.
Free
I was an RA
board,
for
yep.
2 years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, he liked
free
to.
Free toilet paper.
All of the freeness, right? Like he would like to move off campus, but he
uh-huh.
recognizes, you know, the value of what, and so he's applying to be an RA again next year. And, you know, what 21-year-old wants to live in the dorm? nobody wants to live in the dorm.
I did.
You did? You did? Really? Like, well, because you understood, like...
Well, I was RA.
Yeah.
And I just understood community. I love people.
Yeah.
And I love living in that environment.
That would be me, totally.
We live in apartments right now.
Yeah.
I'm like, why aren't we all living like this is a dorm? Mm-hmm. For a while, our neighbors who are across the hallway, I think we had a snowstorm 2 years ago, and we made pancakes, and I realized we don't have any syrup. So we asked them, and so we tended to do that every once in a while with them, but they moved away.
And so,
but the people who live there now are great, too. They gave us some lasagna on Christmas Day.
Oh, that's nice.
But that kind of speaks to what you're doing when you talk about your child and having them do something they love and enjoy, and you found something that you love and enjoy and one
love
hope
it.
And how love long it. Have you been doing it?
Just over 2 years. So the I started 2 years ago this past November, and it was this arm of the company's been around for 10 years, but this piece of it.
That's gonna sound weird.
That's gonna be weird. Yeah, it was this little shaker
water
thing.
Bottle. Yeah. With my green, gross-looking juice.
I didn't mean to judge your juice, okay? It just was kind of
no,
ugly.
No, it does look gross.
Just use an opaque cup next time. So the company's 10 years old, and the part that I do, which is the direct selling part, started, it was 2 years ago this past August, and I joined in November. So there were about 50 people doing it when I came on board.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're close to 4,000. So we're growing. You know, the thing is, it's cool to get older because you get this freedom. And I don't know, maybe you already have this freedom and it just took me this long. I don't know. But you have this freedom to just really be in what you're doing. And mm-hmm. I was told when I was a teenager, don't let your avocation become your vocation. And in other words, like, and this was from somebody who, what came before baby boomers? The greatest
the
generation?
Yeah. I think it's greatest.
So that was from my dad.
Yeah.
Right? Who, to this day, at 80, works really hard. Like, he does a manual labor job.
And it doesn't matter if you like it or not.
Well, and I almost think, although he would say now that he loves what he does, but I think that's new. And I think in his mind, you sort of had to hate your job.
Yes.
Hard work and all that.
Even for some baby boomers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I work hard. Like, I mean, it sounds like maybe I don't work hard because it's like wine and whatever.
You know,
but I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
you know, I work really hard and I
yes,
work long
yeah.
hours and I
uh-huh.
train people and I do all this stuff. But I love it so much and I'm so fed by it. And I want everybody to feel that way.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's my thing. I want people to really get the joy in this and feel how good this feels mm-hmm. to be bringing this happiness to people, you know? Yeah. So I know I'm like, maybe I should get up on the pulpit and start talking to people, like, you know, like, it's the joy of wine, you know, or whatever. But
you could do a couple of things with that. A couple sermons. Yeah. No, I mean, I want to go back to your, don't feel like you don't work hard.
Well,
like,
no,
you work
I
hard,
want,
right?
But so, people don't necessarily know that, right? They're like, oh, she's the fun girl that drinks wine. Yeah.
Right. And that's one of the things that I've had to come to terms with becoming a pastor is I grew up on a farm. My dad's a farmer. He's an electrician also. And in that world, hard work is physical labor.
Yeah.
It's doing hard things and putting things together and fixing them and plowing the fields and all that. So sometimes for people like that, let's say that's more blue collar
mm-hmm.
work.
Mm-hmm.
They don't quite understand the hard work of kind of white collar jobs
mm-hmm.
and the stress that puts on because it's just different worlds,
right?
So I've had it before where I feel guilty about saying, you know, I've worked a lot of hours this week. I feel stressed out. And people are like, what are you doing? You're a pastor. You talk with people. And but you have to start to realize everybody's work has its own stresses.
Yeah.
And nobody else except other people within that line of work understand what you're talking about.
Right.
So.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm not digging ditches.
Yeah.
You know, let's be clear. But.
You're working hard to sell wine.
Well, yeah.
Well, not.
Yes.
I know.
But maybe also. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm working hard. I'm working hard. Like I said, I have a team of people. I coach, I train, and I'm always trying to grow the brand and bring
there's
people in.
There's always something to do.
Yeah, there's all, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like being a student. There's, you can always crack that book and read a little more, right? There's always more notes you can take. There's always, it never ends. So, yeah.
that's what I say here when I leave for the day, or Lisa or somebody will be like, are you done for the day? I'm like, oh, that's never done.
Yeah, exactly.
There's always something.
You know, and there are definitely times, and I've been in direct sales for about 15 years, so I've sold other stuff, jewelry and whatever. And there's a draw. There's definitely, because you don't really ever put it down, you know?
Yes.
I always got to make sure I got a party coming up, or I got, you know, whatever. And so there's definitely this, it's enticing to think about, I'm just going to go get a job. Like, right? Where
Lori, you're speaking my language now.
Right?
Yeah.
I just want to go get a job. I just want to, like, go to work, do my stuff, and walk out the door and not think about it.
Yeah, you got.
Right?
You got to get from A to B.
Yeah.
That's your job for today.
Yeah.
And when you get to B, you're done.
You're done. You just go home.
Yeah.
Go home and watch TV and
that
have
would
dinner.
Be amazing.
Right? I know.
I have dreams about that job.
Yeah, I know. Well, and that's good to hear because, you know, I don't really think of it in that context for you. But yeah, like, man, wouldn't it be so cool to just walk away, close the door, and just be done?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's...
And I think there are jobs like that.
Yeah.
Right?
There are, yeah. Well, I always go back to this, and people are probably sick of me hearing it for me is that when I was in high school, I worked at a movie theater, and sometimes I just yearn for a job like that. Like you just have
I worked at a movie theater too, and it was the best job.
And you go home, you go
ever.
Home.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I was a teenager, so whatever. But it's not like I had, teenager school stuff. But in the context of being an old lady now, like it was nothing, you know. But yeah, movie theater job rocks, right?
It does.
All your movies are free.
Movies are free.
You can go. I lived in a small town ish. Well, you really lived in a small town.
Yeah. I worked at a 3-screen theater, but that was a big deal that there's three
one
screens.
Screen at my theater.
Yeah,
it was the old theater in Carmel, and it's still there. But now they do plays. But anyway. But we could go to any, because this is before, I know,
yes.
I'm elderly.
Yeah. No, I had the same thing. The theater, the 3-screen theater that I worked at was only built because the 1-screen theater had burned down.
Oh my gosh.
So they're like, oh, we got to update. And.
But we got to go to all, because it was before the big, you know, AMC and all that. So we got to go to any theater in town and watch anything we wanted for free. I'll go on a tiny little rant. We had the coolest theaters in my town. So I grew up in Monterey Bay Area in California.
Yeah.
So Cannery Row. Do you know about Cannery Row?
No.
Oh, my gosh. My kids didn't know about it either. John Steinbeck.
Stupid millennials.
No, it's no. It isn't that.
No,
you know what it is? Is it makes me feel bad because it's so much. And I'm sure because I grew up there. But and my dad grew up there and everything. But it makes me feel like a bad mom because it's literary history. It's John Steinbeck. It's, you know, and it's all about that area. And maybe, and like I said, my dad grew up there too, so maybe it's just really, I'm very steeped in it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Cannery Row is along the water. Have you heard of the Monterey Bay Aquarium?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Exactly. So the Monterey Bay Aquarium is at the end of Cannery Row, and it was only built like 20 years ago. But Cannery Row was where the canneries were for the sardines that came in through the bay.
Mm-hmm.
my grandma, my grandpa, my aunties, everybody worked in the sardine factories. So as that business or whatever began to wane, or the sardines all day, I don't really know what happened, but I don't know what happened. Ran out of cans. It started to become more of a, gosh, I'm totally telling you this whole stupid story, but it started to become like a retail, more retail. So I have no recollection of why I'm telling you this. Do you remember why I'm telling you this?
Something with movie
theaters. Movie theaters. So one of the theaters down on Cannery Row, thank you, good job, was called the 812 because that was the address. This is like so 70s. You have no idea. Now I think about it. And so it was just a big open space with a giant screen and pillows all over the floor.
Oh, that is very
70s. Isn't that 70s? And now all I can think of was lice. Oh my gosh. Because we would just all like lay there, and they only showed one movie, and it was Rocky Horror Picture Show every Friday and Saturday night. And of course we would go because I'm that girl. And then this other theater up the street, the Dream Theater, had like love seats, and it was all psychedelic and cool. I know, isn't that so, so crazy? But anyway, we got to go to all those for free. Okay, that was enough of that. That was a long way to go for a really dumb story. Anyway, well, high school, so, working at a movie theater.
Yeah, we just talk about that because, I think with a pastor's job, you take it home all the time. It's hard to shake it off.
Oh, yeah.
Was it yesterday? No, it was Wednesday. The shooting in Florida. Mm-hmm. Even something like that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what you're doing at your church or people that you engage with, but it's something that you have to figure out, how are you going to talk to your congregation about this, and where is God in this? So all these stuff is, it's always churning.
Oh, yeah.
And I find too, with my wife being a therapist, it's hard for them to really shake things off when they get home too.
Oh yeah.
And so there's certain jobs that it just never leaves you.
Right.
And so, in my limited time in ministry, I've started to realize the importance of actually finding time to take a vacation and like just take it off.
Yeah.
I've tried before where it's like, I'm just gonna take these days off. I'm just gonna be a staycation at home, but that doesn't necessarily work. Because you're still here.
Yeah.
You're still in the area, and it's still
right.
So I get all that.
Well, and I think for you and Michelle, like, you know, your work is all you. Like, it's your heart. It's everything. And so even if you do go on a tropical beach somewhere, those things are still with you. It's easier to not think about them for sure. But I don't think it's ever gone. I mean, it's very, you know, whatever. I feel like I keep coming back to my kids, but that's because that's what I do.
Yeah,
but that never, you know, that's your job for life.
Yes.
I'm going to say this out loud for the second time ever, about to be 57. My mom is 79, and she's still my mom, and I'm still her kid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a grown woman with a whole family, and but I'm just her daughter, you know, like I'm still her kid, and she still checks in on me and worries about me. That you can't go far enough away for that. Like, you know,
parents never stop worrying. They're always thinking.
Yeah.
That's exhausting.
You know, it is. It is. And it isn't. I mean, it definitely, it ebbs and flows, and you know, you're always gonna, whatever, think about, worry about your kids, whatever. But
yeah,
it's all worth it. I promise.
Yeah.
I promise. I know. Well, I'm just saying.
You know, after parents' night out here at church, I'm usually like, I'm good.
I'm so good without these kids. Yeah. Well, what happens when you have kids, and this is a detriment to you probably, but it's kind of a secret among parents. You actually don't like other people's kids as much.
I've heard that. Yeah.
You're like,
people tell me that all the time. I'm like, good. Well, they're not your kids. I'm like, okay.
Yeah,
I mean, it may seem silly, but you get a little glimpse of that with like, we have Cal. We love Cal, our dog. When we watch other dogs for people, we
love them. Such a pain, right? I know. Listen, Dude, I get it.
But it's, you know, it's like you don't have that.
Like, you don't.
I know Cal. I know his body language. I know what he wants, what he's looking like. You know what I mean? But other people's dogs are like,
yeah, well,
what do you want?
And like, you don't have that unconditional love that you have with Cal.
Yeah.
Or your own kid, you know? Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I don't have grandkids yet, so I don't know what that's like. It looks pretty cool. Yeah. Like, it looks like you get to skip all of the parenting stuff, and you just get to do the fun stuff, you know?
That to me is one of the most interesting things to see. I have a lot of, you know, my parents became grandparents several years ago. I have some mentors, you know, Russ, and there's a pastor up in Denver. He just had his first grandkid in November, and it's so fun to watch them when they have their first grandchild. And like, what? And there's just something about it. I don't know if anybody can put it into words. It's just something
I don't special. Know. Like I said, I don't have, I have a, my daughter, who is not my daughter, in my life, who took care of my oldest from the time he was one. She's the only babysitter my kids ever had. And so I was definitely a mother figure for her. She was 13 when she started watching my kids and had some stuff going on in her house, right? So she then got married, bought a house down the street, and said, "Will you watch my baby now?" And so I got to sort of have a little piece of that. But I do think it's different. And what I've heard one grandmother say is, "I look at my grandson, and he looks just like my son." So it's like I get to relive my son's babyhood and toddlerhood without all the mess, like without worrying about the mess he's making or whatever. So
that's a good description.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. Like that makes sense to me. Yes. We're a ways off, God willing. Everybody has girlfriends, but let's hold off just for a minute.
So you're a very joyful person, and you seem like the person that whenever you're around, anybody can talk to you easy. You spread joy, and is that because of all the wine? Is
that yeah. You know,
Have you always been this sweet way?
Yeah, I have. I feel like I was absolutely blessed with a sunny disposition. I was always like this from the time I was little. And I know what a blessing it is, because a lot of people aren't like this, you know? And a lot of people suffer from depression. I've also, I'm going to knock wood is what you're hearing right now. I have not personally suffered a lot of hardships in my life, you know? I haven't, I mean, you know, I hate to even say things out loud, but, you know, I haven't lost a parent. I haven't, you know, I haven't lost a child, thank God. Close friends have. All of those things. And, so, yeah, I don't know.
Do you ever feel guilty about that?
God, I feel like I just all of a sudden I'm in therapy. no, you know what? I don't feel guilty.
I did kind of shift.
I'm all like, I need to lay down right now because, no, I don't feel guilty. I don't feel guilty about it. I do feel, I know it's coming, of course, you know, so that's, and as I get older and my parents get older, and my parents are both super healthy, fit people, like, you know, crazy fit. But I know it's coming. And my sweet husband lost his mom, his dad, and his sister within a 4-year period. And so I kind of watched that go down, and his, you know, whatever. So I don't feel guilty. I think I feel more anxious at this point about, 'cause I know it's coming, you know? But I do believe in my heart that I'm a happy person. I think the world is awesome. I'm, you know, I feel very loved and blessed, and so, and always have, you know.
And no matter what you're going through in life, you always have certain experiences that are going to speak to certain people, because we're relationship, we're built for relationship, and so we like to know we're not alone. And so sometimes people feel guilty because they haven't had any hardships, because they can't connect with those people necessarily on a deeper level. But you're connecting with people that haven't had those hardships also. Everybody has their own experiences. They're all right. Valid, whether you know you have kids or don't have kids. And one of the phrases, should I say it?
Yeah, say it.
Well, one of the phrases that bugs me, as a person who doesn't have a child, and also as a pastor, knowing the different struggles different people have, is that you will never know unconditional love until you have a child.
Mm.
Which it may be completely true, right? I'm not.
But it's not. It is not real for you because.
Right. Well, yeah. Like, I'm not arguing that it's not true. What I'm arguing is, when you say something like that to somebody who's maybe single or infertile or something right. like that, you're basically telling them that they won't be a whole person uh-huh. until they have a kid. Mm. You know?
Yeah.
And so that's one of those things that, at our age and not having a kid yet, we're actually just waiting until we are like, hey, we want to.
Right, right, right. And I think,
not
yeah.
any pressures of like we should. And
right.
But that's been one of those things the last couple of years we started sure. to hear people say things. We're like, huh. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And people don't.
They don't. To do that, it's like, it's the conversation you were having with Michelle earlier, and you said that thing and you went, oh gosh, that's not what I meant.
Right. Yeah.
And that isn't. And people, and so that's what I think. I think, yeah. you know, you said a lot of things there that were really, really important. But I think that, so whenever I have a meeting, mm-hmm. And I've been on school board, not on the school board, but I've been on committees and SAC committees, and I was on the board of a school and things like that. We create meeting norms, and I don't know if that's just what I. You guys do that when you have meetings? You have norms for your meetings? No, you're looking up weirdly.
Like for staff
it's meetings it's language. So it's saying here are the expectations mm-hmm. for when we get together and meet. Okay, yeah. My two norms that I always put on the board. Are there must be food. This is my first one. Uh-huh. And then my second one is that everybody understand and be in the place that everybody's coming from a good place. Nobody is ever trying to be malicious. Yeah. Nobody's ever trying. And of course, that's not true.
Right, right, right. Actually, this reminds me, I'm going into my cabinet here to, because I'll always butcher it if I try and do it from memory. Ugh.
It's not there.
It's not there. We have norms for theology on tap.
Okay. Oh, which I haven't made it to.
Yeah.
I'm always working.
I thought about doing it at Crush, but that's just so small.
Crush it's would hard be hard, to, but yeah. Astro's cool.
It is, but it's very industrial and loud.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, anyway.
Yeah. So our guidelines for conversation are no soapboxes. Nobody gets the last word. Listen well. So, like, because in our culture, we tend to just react.
Mm-hmm.
And so listen well, ask clarifying questions about what people are saying. No topic is off limits. And then I think the last one is basically don't be a jerk.
Right.
Yeah. And so I kind of get yeah. these norms that...
If you can always try to... And you can't always, because we're just human beings and right. we're not... we're broken, so yeah. we can't. But if you can... And you did recognize, like, when somebody says that to you, like, I'm sitting here thinking, that is such a crappy thing to say
mm-hmm.
to this young couple who is just living their lives. And,
yeah.
but that person didn't mean it like right. that.
Yeah. And
they're trying to describe their experience.
Yes.
Right? Like, well, here's what I know.
Yes.
I didn't know what that felt like until I had a kid.
And you have to be able to start realizing that.
Right.
And some people never get to a point where they realize those things.
Right.
So then they get hurt by everything.
Oh, yeah,
said.
Exactly.
They, you know, they can't put themselves outside of themselves to understand.
And to go back, you know, that's the other thing that you talked about community, and to go back to the shooting, which I'm sorry that we keep going back to that, but
it's current.
Super current and prevalent. But I read a thing yesterday that said, I'm like, you know, I'll get it wrong, but it was essentially people in community typically don't hurt people, right? Mm-hmm. It's lonely people. It's hurt people who hurt people.
Yeah.
And if we can, you know, because it's very, you know, as a parent and a pastor, I am sure, I feel a tremendous responsibility to fix this, whatever it is, right? Like, mm-hmm. what in the actual heck is happening why is this happening and what are we doing wrong? And so I felt super frustrated yesterday, and then I had a couple of people reach out to me. And one of the things that, you know, that it was about was like, reach out to people, you know, and I tell my kids, like, that person that's sitting alone, go talk to them. They're sad or lonely, or maybe they're angry or whatever.
Yeah.
But the more we can touch people and reach out to people in one way or another, maybe that's one thing we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other person that said something to me, because out of my screaming, what do we do? And she said, you know, I'm a teacher and I teach teachers. And so my job is to teach people to be empathetic and to hear and say no gently. And, you know, things like that. And you're, you know, you have that same opportunity in your mm-hmm. position to mm-hmm. teach us to be empathetic and mm-hmm. kind and, you know, all of that. And as a mom and as a wine pourer, you know, yeah. I can do that too. Yeah. I can be in that place too. And those are things that I can do that are mm-hmm. small.
Yeah.
But hopefully would spread out.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we got to do other stuff too.
It's 10:30.
Okay.
Do you have to go at all?
I have a call at 11:15, so we can do whatever you want to do.
So I kind of want to keep going on this topic.
Okay.
If
I'm having fun, yeah.
If you're fine, because then I might split this up into two, part one, part two.
Okay.
But the interesting thing about what happened Wednesday, and I just talked with a youth student yesterday about this, was because I was asking that student how they were feeling
mm-hmm.
and how people at school were reacting or feeling. And I think what I see is kids react a certain way, but parents are reacting so much more to what happened mm-hmm. because parents are thinking that could be my child at a school. Or, you know, kids are in a different place because they're like, yeah, it's scary, and now this is more of a reality that could be our school, that it keeps happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is scary, but kids also live in this land of,
yeah,
I'm invincible.
This is, well, know, for sure.
But parents, you understand mortality, and,
right.
and anything could happen at any moment. And so, on Wednesday and yesterday, I saw parents dealing with it a lot deeper than students are.
So, having a student in my home, who a student who is not, he's not super open.
Mm-hmm.
He's not, I mean, anyway, he's not super open. You have to dig a little bit to get there.
He's a teenage boy.
Right, yeah. Right. So, and he's also very passionate about his beliefs. And so he goes from 0 to 60 very quickly and gets, you know, hyper engaged and, you know, and so I'm.
Is he going to be a politician?
I want him to be an attorney or a politician. And he wants to be a stinking engineer. I'm all, dude, that's come boring. On. Anyway, do you need to get that?
No, I don't recognize the number. So we'll just let it ring.
We'll let it ring. Yeah. So it's a cute little ring. So we're sitting there that night and, you know, I'm at the point now I've seen so, I mean, we all have, but you know, again, I'm not watching the news. I won't do it. I will. And I'm not putting my head in the sand. My body, my brain and my heart does not need to
mm-hmm.
see any of that stuff
yeah.
again.
Yeah.
Right. So we're sitting there and we're not really talking much about it. And because we don't really know much yet, right? Like I've been out all day. I haven't seen the news, etc. So he says,
yeah,
I'm going through this Twitter feed. And I mean, I never even let him finish. He said, and there's, you know, there's video of the gunshots or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I don't want you watching that. Your body does not need to see that. Like, please don't watch that. And of course, he gets very defensive because like, you're not letting me talk and you're not letting me finish. So anyway, this conversation slash argument that we keep sort of coming back to is, in my old lady opinion, people that are that age, 17, whatever, and up to my 24-year-old is as far as I can go with my personal knowledge, I feel so much that they are immune. Mm-hmm. Not to overgeneralize at all, but they, I sound like such an old lady. They play these video games where you're shooting and killing people, yeah. And it's on a screen this big. He's watching this on a screen this big. Uh-huh. Like, that doesn't translate to the actual blood and gore and mm-hmm. death and fear and terror. Because you're watching it on a little tiny screen, you know? And so he argues back with me that, you know, of course he's not numb to it. Of course he understands it. And, you know, and then you bring in the piece that you talked about, this immortality that kids have at 17, that nothing bad will ever happen, you know, and I'll live forever and I can smoke cigarettes and drive my car drunk or crazy or, you know. Anyway, so yeah, it's hard to watch.
Well, and the student I was talking with yesterday also had a I was talking to him about I watched some of those videos. I saw a video of the kids in the classroom waiting, and then the SWAT team came in, so they all had to raise their hands, and it was being recorded, and when people rose their hands, you saw a bunch of other kids with their phones out, and I was like, you know, the kids who are currently in high school and myself, our generations aren't that far apart.
Right, no.
But yet, in any situation like that, or if something's happening outside on the street, that's not my first thought to take out my phone and record. But that's theirs. Mm-hmm. And that's what they were doing then. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's all over on Snapchat and Twitter and stuff. And I think there may be something to it when you talk about they're experiencing everything through this screen, the small screen, that it starts to become not reality. But at the same time, I wonder if that's just our judgment because
exactly.
We didn't grow up with it, mm-hmm. but to them, that is reality.
Right. And that's a really, really good assessment. And I think, I am putting my 50 almost 7 year old judgment on that. I didn't grow up playing video games. I barely watched TV growing up. I'm that old. You know, like we just didn't, there were three channels and wasn't a whole lot on, you know, but these guys are so you know, steeped in all of that. And, the further, the constant information. So a couple of things about that. Did you see the text messages? All the kids, it's heart-wrenching, but kids sending text messages mm-hmm. to their parents and their siblings and how much they love them, and I don't know if I'm going to make it and all of this. I mean, that was, and then the other thing is that through that conversation with him, which did get quite heated, because I just was like, dude, all I'm trying to do is protect you. I'm not trying to judge you. I don't want your beautiful brain and heart to see all of that. Mm-hmm. It's bad for you, you know? And so we were going through this conversation. Then he says, you know what? I really want to stop talking about this. I have to go to school tomorrow. So that was for me a glimpse into him saying, this is freaking me out. Whether I tell you it's freaking me out, you know, or I tell you, no, I'm not scared or whatever. It's freaking me out. I got to go to that building every single day, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. And I'm like, you know, are there any kids that you're not really sure about? You know, do you know where how to get out? I don't want to have these conversations with my kid.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And for you, I know, you know, poor Russ and Eric, I have written emails about kids in our community who have committed suicide or whatever. Like, what do we do? I'm looking at you.
Yeah.
What do we do? What, you know? So I know that's a huge burden on you.
You know, I think when I've had some experiences with people who need that type of help, or even somebody who's homeless or and needs shelter or something like that, the thing we keep running into is there's no resources,
mm-hmm.
especially around here. People who are homeless around here, it's like, sorry, like maybe go up to Denver.
Go up to Denver.
You know,
mm-hmm.
there's shelters up there and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our deacons do a great job. They always, they'll supply two nights at Super 8.
Right.
But we're not built to help people long term. And as pastors, when we have people that come in that have maybe mental issues that are beyond our expertise, we always refer them
mm-hmm.
to somebody. So we keep, I keep a catalog of a couple of people, therapists I trust and know and that
right.
they can go to. And but that's all you can do.
Right.
It's up to them to that point to actually go to that person
right.
and want counseling. And I think as pastors, at least in this time, this day and time, what I see more and more is our job is to remind people that we belong to each other,
mm-hmm.
that we belong to God. Everything belongs to God, and we all belong to each other because we're part of what God created, because we're stuck in this mode of tribalism where we're thinking this is, we're over here or
yeah.
you're over there, and we don't want them because they're mentally ill, or we don't want them because they're poor and smelly, and just reminding people this isn't how Jesus taught us to live.
Right.
This isn't how God originally intended it to be. And so I think that's what I keep going back to and trying to...
Right.
And it takes a long time to wake people up to those type of things.
Well, and I think, you know, without getting too deep into politics, et cetera, our current culture is very much we are separate.
Mm-hmm.
It's us and them, and there's not a middle ground. There's not a meeting place in so many areas.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so that comes back to, you know, you be in your lane, doing everything that you can do in your lane. I'll be
mm-hmm.
in my lane, doing everything I can do in my lane. And hopefully we'll start merging out, you know,
yeah.
with other people and get the message across, you know? I mean...
Yeah.
Otherwise, it just, you know, I hear my kids say, I say, well, what about, can we do this law? He says, that'll never pass. We can't. That won't happen.
Mm-hmm.
I say, well, then we should do this. Well, that will never happen. And it's like this very, what is the word? Is it fatalistic? Is that the word I'm looking for? It's, I don't think that's it. But it's this.
Yeah, kind of. I know what you're saying.
It's this. This is the way it is. And we cannot affect
change. We've just given up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I tell my poor kids, because I'm all, it's on you. You
oh, yeah.
have to change it. You guys, you're the ones that have to change it.
Right.
Because we're going to die in a minute. Like, you know? No, seriously,
yeah.
though. I mean, these are my people, you know, that are, I don't know, I'm not going to get all political, but.
Well, I get what you're saying, because, like, I think the frustration for a lot of people at this moment in time is, these things keep happening, but we're not taking any kind of steps to try and prevent it from
yeah.
happening again. We had planes fly into the Twin Towers on September 11th, and all of a sudden, things change quickly.
Right. Right.
Now we have to take off our shoes when we go on the airplane all day.
One dude's got a match in his sock or something, and now everybody has to strip down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But since, we always go back to Columbine, because that was the first
yeah.
big one. But since then until now, there's been countless school shootings, but yet we haven't done anything.
We teach people how to react to them.
Right.
We don't do anything about stopping them.
Right. And whether people are listening to this and they're thinking, well,
we're getting
liberal land or something, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying we haven't done anything at all. Like, I'm not saying... not taking a stance that we should do gun control
right.
or mental health or things like that. We just haven't done anything.
Right.
We've just let it be. And one of the things I'm starting to see, at least with this one on Wednesday that happened, was these kids are starting to stand up and be like, we need to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really interested in what happens when people my age
yeah.
and their age start getting into
yeah.
politics and what's going to happen then. Because with any generation and shift, what I see is our generations are looking at what's happening in DC now. And we're like, what are you doing? And so in the future, I have hope that's going to be more reaching across the aisle, working together, that personal politics and parties aren't going to be so important anymore, but it's about the common good. And I think we've lost that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a safe thing to say. And I think people, if people are real into politics, maybe some of the words we spoke are going to be kind of trigger.
Right.
Words of like, oh no. But we've created this all together.
Correct.
This isn't anybody's fault. This isn't any one group's fault, one party's fault. But where we are today, we created this all together.
Yeah.
And it's going to have to take us together to fix it.
Right.
But I'm afraid it's going to have to get worse before it gets better.
Which is so awful. I mean, yeah. That's terrifying to think. But I think, I don't know, how much worse does it get? You know, honestly? I mean, I know. Don't ever say that, right? I know. But man, oh man, oh man. It's so bad. Like, so bad. But yeah, you're right. And it will take, like I said, I tell my kids and I'm telling you, it's you guys that are going to, you're the ones that have to get out there and change it. I march, you know, I write, I send emails, I text, I do all those things.
Yep.
But apparently we got to do more. And then we come back to, I'm going to be in my lane and I'm going to do the best that I can do in my life. In my time that I've got here, I'm going to do the very best that I can do.
Yeah.
And you guys all do that too.
You know, I think one of the positive things I see after talking with you today, and also yesterday I talked with Jenny Faust about her Love Justly.
I love.
And we were just with each other, we were talking about this new movement where people in my generation are creating these companies that have ethical and moral positions to treat their employees and people well, and to treat the world well and stand for humanity and things like that. And I wonder if that's going to be the next shift. And you see these big corporations actually like behind the scenes working at bettering that because they're seeing it coming. If that's going to help fix some of the stuff. But I think it all has to come down to money. There has to be something to do with money that fixes it.
It's true. You're right. I mean, it's, you know, it's all about the money. It's all about the money. But it's people like Jake Cloverdance, our founder, people like Jenny, you know, who, you know, our company will be a very wealthy company. And then you've got somebody like Jake who has that vision, who wants to make the world a better place. And that will keep happening. That will keep happening. So these bigger corporations, they're always going to be about the money. But then there's going to be this societal pressure that they're starting to feel from you guys. Of what are you going to do with all that money? Why aren't you doing something good?
Right.
You know, they talk about, and yesterday they were talking a lot about the dollar amount that a certain organization pays another group of people without getting too deep. And it's like, you know, $30 million. Well, guess what? Bill Gates, let's do it, buddy. You got that, right? Like, why don't you put that to some good? I mean, you're doing great things. You're putting computers in schools. You're doing all of this. Why don't you use that to squash this other thing over here? Yeah. I'm being super vague, but you know what I'm saying. Sorry, people that are not feeling that way. But that's what it's going to take. It's going to take all that money. And so hopefully, you know, One Hope will be one of those voices that has that kind of money to, you know, use in a good way.
And what I talked about with Jenny was that we, this new consciousness of buying stuff that treats people well, that's showing corporations where you want to put your money. And that's starting to change the landscape of how you want to spend your money.
1,000%
And we've seen that. A small example is organic foods.
Yeah.
Is now almost every grocery store has their own organic aisle, because all of a sudden there's a demand that people started buying that, and they wanted to get in on that piece of money.
Right. And so maybe it's not altruistic, and maybe it's not, you know, they're not really there for the, who cares? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, who cares if big XYZ company at their soul are not really, you know, philanthropic.
Yeah.
But they see, like, oh, this is the trend. I need, okay. I don't need you to really be philanthropic. Yeah. Just do it, you know? Like,
well, yeah. I think that's kind of what the, people are going to laugh at this, but like the tiny house movement.
Yeah.
It's kind of about too, is like, this is an insane amount of money people are paying for space.
It's so crazy.
And so we're going to, you know, jump that system.
Maybe I'm a millennial at heart, because like we watch, you know, when we have a down day, we'll watch, whatever it's called,
with Tiny House Nation or something.
Well, no, I don't watch that, because I would hurt somebody if I had to live in a really tiny house. But no, I can't. The Flippers, Joanna and Chip.
Yeah, Fixer Upper.
Fixer Upper. And I look at that, and I look at Michael, and I'm like, why do you need that much house? Mm-hmm. You don't. Turns out, you don't.
Right.
You know, your house, I mean, whatever, your house, I don't know, whatever. Maybe this is just because I'm older and I'm ready to downsize. But, you know, it's like, what do you need exactly? Mm-hmm. Do you need a kitchen that is that big? You have two kids. And you probably don't even cook. Like, you know, and again, it's just whatever. You know, your house is your warm space, whatever, whatever. Mm-hmm. But,
well, think about, my house didn't have this, but some people have the nice dining room.
Right.
But they never eat
in Nobody there.
Unless
there.
It's a holiday or whatever. So it only gets used a couple times a year.
Yeah. 1,000%. 1,000%. Yeah. What is that about? I mean, yeah. So, but, you know, I get everybody has different values. And they, yeah, if I had that kind of money, no, I'm not building a giant house. No.
You should watch, on Netflix, there's a documentary called, I think it's Minimalism, but it follows these two guys that started a movement, Minimalism, mm-hmm. and how, like, they talk about most people only use about 40% of the space in their house mm-hmm. to actually live in, and the rest is storage. Mm-hmm. They store things.
And turns out, you can store a lot.
You can store a lot.
You know, for real though. I mean, you know, we've lived in our house for 20 years.
Yeah.
And so we have accumulated a lot. And one kid lives at home. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's a 5-bedroom house. So, you know, I'm ready to let it go, man. Yeah. I'm ready to let it go.
I just think it's interesting to take a look at it and say, what are we doing? Whereas other people are like, oh, these people are crazy. You know, they don't want to let go of the stuff, but it's okay to let go of stuff. And it's not bad to look at it and be like, some people feel guilty when you say like, we only use 40. They're like, what are you trying to say? Do I have to move out? Do I have to get rid of stuff? It's like, no, but like, first step is always just being aware of it.
Right.
You
know? So right.
We have way more than
everything, supersized food, supersized houses, supersized cars. I have a teeny tiny car.
Yeah.
I want a little bigger car. My car's really tiny, by the way.
I have a TV in here. Yeah. I don't need a TV in here.
But would you ever put your computer, your screen up there?
Yeah, I can cast up there.
I mean, that way you know, it's a little easier on your eyes.
We're talking about minimalism stuff. Oh, yeah. Sitting in our closet.
Oh, just in storage.
And I was like, I'll just take it out and put it in here.
Oh, yeah.
Right, we're sitting here talking about it, but I have this TV in my office. I'm like, I don't need that.
Someday I'll bring you into my husband's office. It's,
Is it kind of his man cave, too?
I don't know what it is. He works on, I think he has 4 screens. So he works, and he needs to, and that's fine. Yep. So it's whatever. He's a collector. We'll call it that.
Well, I have this program that I can set up my iPad and hook it through my MacBook, and then I have 2 screens.
Yeah.
And I thought I was fancy.
No. I work on 2 screens. I work on 2 screens, but mostly because my laptop is tiny, so I just put it over to the bigger screen so I can see it. So
yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So it's probably time for me to.
Yeah. Thanks, Lori.
Oh, this was so fun.
This is probably the longest one we've done.
Shocker.
I'm not quite sure minute-wise. but it was great. And yeah. If people want to know more about One Hope Wine, where can they go?
They can go to my website, which is via onehope.com/withLori. They could just type in One Hope Wine and read a lot about what our company does and the impact that we have and things like that.
Or so, they can become friends with you on Facebook.
They can totally become
Tasting Tuesday.
Yeah, Tasting Tuesday is on. Thank you for remembering that. Yeah, Tasting Tuesday is on at 4 o'clock most Tuesdays. And I'm on Facebook. I'm all over Facebook, so you can find me there. And
if you want your wine actually delivered, then you can
have it delivered right here to church at New Hope Way. Yeah. You guys have been awesome about that. Seriously. Sometimes I know there's like 6 cases of wine in there and people are like, what is going on
Everybody around here just starts to get curious. Like,
thanks. All this right. was super fun. Super fun. It was
Thank
good
you,
to talk
Laurie.
To you.
It was great.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you later.
Cheers.